Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Podcast. I am your host, Dan Abern, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, joined today by Jeff Shannon.
Yep, I am the managing editor of Inside Lacrosse, and we're here for another one of these prep podcasts.
Yes, it's been a hellacious June and one of the biggest recruiting weekends on the calendar, where you're beyond it, the Under Armour Games. We're officially in the dead period now, Jeff. We've got a whole bunch to talk about on this week, about this weekend, which Inside Lacrosse had a pretty considerable team out covering all the games at both the underclass and the senior games. We're working on a standout post from that. But right now, let's delve into the senior game first. The North won 18-16. I actually thought for once that there was a decent amount of defense played in this game. Do you agree with that?
It's funny. Usually, when I look back at the rosters or whatnot, and when we put these teams together, it's always, you know, so hard and so tough to kind of come up with a group. This time, the defense was relatively easy to come up with. A guy here or there, you know, we really quibbled over some of the spots. But I thought, to your point, this was an excellent group on defense, starting with the goalies. Sometimes there's a goalie you go like, oh, did we overthink this? Did we not think it? All four of these goalies were fantastic. You start with the South team, and you had Matt Schmidt from Culver, who's going to Notre Dame, who had 10 saves in the first half for the South. And then you had Alex Rode, who is going to Virginia. He had 5 saves in the second half. Sort of I would say the first half was probably people were focused on it, and then the second half, it's an all-star game. Things start falling apart a little bit. And then the other two goalies for the North, Drew Morris, headed to Maryland, I thought was awesome. 11 saves there. You really see why Maryland, he kind of fits that mold of Maryland goalies, and we could kind of get into that. But also Ryan Cornell, who was Vermont's first ever Under Armour All-American, who had been the goalie for the undefeated and co-number one Darien this past year with 4 saves. Again, sort of a different sloppy second half, but he looked great, almost overly explosive. He's someone that you like to see. I bet you Chris Feist and that crew will do a good job kind of focusing his talent and his energy onto the field. But really like that those four goalies to start. It's funny to start with defense at an all-star game. It's definitely that they just – those guys shined.
And another key tenet of most all-star games, but also the Under Armour All-America game in particular, the celebrations.
the internet world was abuzz with those. It's funny, I don't comment much on Twitter anymore, but I did say I'm intrigued by the oral history now of celebrations in the Under Armour All-American game. The first viral moment for one of these games was there was an attackman who went to Virginia. Oh, Bocklet. Chris Bocklet. Who, in a move, he decided to do a little hidden ball trick of his own and just throw the ball into the net with his hand. And when they showed the replay, Mark Dixon had a great line. He's like, "You can't do that, Chris." And that sort of started these viral moments. Highlights for me would go back to Matt Rambo and their crew doing the canoe after the goal.
Yeah, the rowboat. That was my favorite.
The rowboat. Think about that. All those guys just won a title this year. It would have been funny if they were at Gillette Stadium rowing the boat. But so those are always fun. I let the internet make judgments on those for me. I don't care. It's an all-star game.
Yeah, that seemed to be a point of contention on the internet during the game. Personally, I enjoy them. I think they're fun. Our game's about fun. Don't think they're unsportsmanlike or disrespectful to the game. You know, we got to really account. These are 17, 18, 19-year-old kids on TV for the first time. They know that they're going to get chided for doing these celebrations when they get to college. This is their chance to have fun. You know, everybody's complicit in it, and they know the celebrations aren't good fun.
It's an all-star game, lacrosse game, on July 4th weekend in the summer. Like, attention, whatever attention you can get, I'm cool with it. Another one I forget about, but Miles Jones is doing the Dougie after a goal was one of my favorites. Think about that. Think about data references, the Dougie.
And well, the funny thing was, as I asked Bubba Fairman before the game, did he have any celebrations planned? And he said, no. And I said, you got to do the backpack kid dance. And you're probably looking at me not knowing who or what that is, but he tried to do it, and I don't think he executed.
Was that after his first goal? I just was watching the...
Did a little shake. I was like, I think he's trying, but it was not good. But the RKO loved it.
Yeah, that's the one.
From the top rope, out of nowhere.
That's the one that went nuts. Dan, who else did you like in this game?
Let's start with the MVP, Connor DeSimone. What was it? 3 goals, 2 assists for him. He's got all the physical tools to excel at the next level, but I think what really makes him stand out is the skill and the smarts. He's just so tremendously polished. His IQ is very typical, but really beyond, I would say, also, too, the smarts you see in a Long Island player.
Are you calling Long Island people not smart, Dan?
No, I'm saying is that you usually see like a caliber of intelligence that Long Island players tend to have, and I'm actually going to come around to this when we talk about a standout from the underclass games. But you know, DeSimone kind of started his career as a downhill, alley-dodging midfielder, and I think that's what kind of appealed him to Dave Petromala, Johns Hopkins staff. But over the past 2 years, we've really seen him diversify his game. He's starting to play a lot of attack, of which he's excelling at that position now. He's an extremely versatile offensive player. I think that's what gets him on the field at Homewood next year. I don't know if he starts, but I do think he does see the field in a meaningful way.
Oh, I think he's on some sort of midfield unit to begin with. I would predict the first. He's a weird player in a sense that if you had your druthers, I would put him on the attack immediately. Someone who you want on the field all the time. He could play above GLE, below GLE, very slick, very good with assists, very good with seeing the field. But I don't know if Hopkins doesn't need attackman. They got him. So you got to find so he can play midfield. I actually thought his athleticism was a little underrated, and in the game it showed itself a little bit. I don't know. I'm intrigued to see him dodging against Division One defenses. That's my one thing that I think Hopkins really needs. And again, they had it 2 years ago, then all those guys got injured. This past year, all the guys who were injured never really came back to full form, and were missing the dodging threat. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if Connor is that. I think his skills are IQ, underrated athleticism, the ability to see the field, feed, score. I don't know if the alley dodges are his thing yet, but I'm intrigued to see. And he really impressed me. I love watching this kid. I think he's awesome. It was fortuitous that he took the MVP award home.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know if he starts next year because of the long jam at attack, and they also
return. I don't think it's at attack. I don't think it's attack. I think he goes midfield.
Yeah, I think he at least starts maybe as – well, not starts, but comes out as a out-of-the-box kind of midfielder. You know, put him in some invert sets, stuff like that, or maybe just a straight-up second-line midfielder.
Oh, second-line at the least, yeah. That's my thought.
Just tremendously polished kid. And we kind of set this kid up to be his game. Dehogan Nanacoke.
Yeah, Tohoku.
Superstar attackman going to Albany. What were you going to say?
I was going to say he was the star. He was the highlight, and I think the guy that everybody wanted to see going into this game. His reputation preceded him, and for the most part, he lived up to it. He looked exactly how you expected him to play. I like to compare, and when I did my 10 who impressed, I constantly compare his game to John Grant Jr. He has all those requisite box skills of someone who has logged tons of minutes indoors, but he's big, he's physical, he keeps his head up, he knows how to use his body, and his body works with him. Lyle Thompson, I always liked his game. I always thought he was a fantastic player. It was always interesting seeing him play big, though, and having to kind of grow into playing big. He's a stick kid. This guy can play big. Tohoku can play big day one. And I think, again, when I see him, it's a new John Grant Jr. out there on the field.
Yeah, he definitely put his skills on display in this game, but I was absolutely blown away by how big this kid is. And I'm not a guy who gets dwarfed often, but standing next to him, I felt like a small guy, and I am 6 foot, pretty much 200 pounds. This guy has got to be at least 6'1", maybe 6'2", and I'd say 220 at the least. This guy has got – his shoulders are as big as my head. Like, he's huge, man. Then, the stick is unparalleled, basically. We haven't seen stick skills like that coming from a high school recruit since Lyle Thompson. That roll and then backhand score was absolutely filthy. But Paul Carcaterra talked with him, and he also mentioned this on the broadcast. He thinks that Daoga is one of the most surefire recruits to excel in his freshman season. And I think you got to agree with that. You know, the environment that he's coming into, he's entering an Albany team that's looking to have possibly its most complete roster, you know, back to front. You got Connor Fields returning, that experienced midfield, T.D. Ireland, you know, feeding them possessions. And then they return their entire starting defense. You got to think that this kid is the X factor that gets them back to championship, or does not get them back, but breaks them through to championship weekend for the first time ever. Paul says he scores 50 goals. Quint says he scores 80 points. I would probably fall somewhere in there. I think 80 points is good, maybe 40 and 40 along those lines. But high praise, but also high expectations for Daoga.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing him on campus this year for Albany.
All right, Jeff, before we move on, we got to give a shout-out to our first sponsor of this podcast, Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/lacrosse. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/lacrosse. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Dan, who else did you like in the Under Armour senior game? Who was maybe someone who was a little underrated that popped out for you?
Well, a guy you actually mentioned earlier in the podcast, Drew Morris. I thought he was incredible in this game. And this is not a game for goalies, not a game for defense in particular, but I thought Drew Morris was awesome. He was great from the north. I believe he had, what, 8 saves in the first quarter. It kind of set the tone defensively for them.
It was 11 saves. It was nuts. Yeah.
It was 11 saves? Yeah. I thought it was 11 saves in the half. But
oh, yeah. I'm sorry. In the half. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the first quarter. Yeah.
He actually seemed to make more of the notable saves in this game. Like, kind of like, oh, man, that was absolute robbery. There was a lot of behind-the-back passes that he kind of spoiled. I think he'll have to wait until Dan Morris, just to clarify, also no relation. I think he'll have to graduate for him to kind of see the field first for the Terps, but I do think that he is a starter down the road. Pretty much kind of been a hot commodity as a goalie as long as kind of we've been familiar with him along the recruiting circuit, so I think he's an eventual starter down in College Park.
I liked it's funny, someone who has been historically as good as he is in the Maryland area, it's not a shock to say that he performed well, but I really got a sense of Alex Trippi's game a little bit more in this contest. You really see the similarities, and if I'm looking at him like a coach at UNC, I'm seeing someone who is quick, nifty around the cage, has the IQ, but also the athleticism to play in a way that's similar to Joey Sankey from a couple of years ago, Jimmy Bitter, that type of lacrosse player finding a home on North Carolina's offense again. He had 5 points, 2 goals, 3 assists, and just kind of really reminded me of those two guys on UNC's offense. So that was interesting to see.
And that was a player that Carolina was kind of missing this year. They had Andy Matthews, who's a great passer and a great he's got great vision, but I don't think he has the same athletic skill set that Alex Trippi does bring to the table. I think he is a possible wild card to get some PT in the early going for the Tar Heels. Two guys I want to give a shout-out to, both going to Syracuse, Lucas Quinn and Owen Seabold. You know, with the graduation of all those midfielders that the Orange have this year, and then, you know, we're kind of hearing some things about a lot of attackmen from the Orange also transferring out, I think that these two guys could find themselves with some considerable PT sooner rather than later. You know, Lucas Quinn, he's kind of been a well-known playmaker for the entirety of his high school career, helped Niskayuna get to their first state title. And he put him on a tremendous display, range shooting in this showcase game. And then there's Owen Seabold, who's a tremendously skilled and tall, well-built attackman. He put his strength on display in that one goal where he basically split a double team, you know, trucked through those two defenders and then delivered a backhand score. That was awesome. I've always really liked his game. He's good at operating from X of the wing, good at turning the corner. His dad's an original member of the 1983 Syracuse lacrosse team, the first Syracuse team to win an NCAA title. So he's got the legacy factor going for him. I think he's going to be a, a great player for Syracuse, you know, possibly down the road.
Yeah, we'll get into it a little later in the summer, but the Syracuse midfield class coming in particular is interesting. I'm really looking forward to dissecting that crew a little bit more. It's deep, it's athletic, there's a lot of talent there, and I think Lucas kind of was the spear tip of that. He kind of highlights a little bit of what's kind of coming in for Syracuse on that end. For a team that doesn't, you know, it doesn't go to freshmen quickly, but it's interesting that they have this volume of crew guys coming in. One other guy I want to throw in there was Justin Shockey. It was tough. Justin Ignacio headed to Ohio State. He had a hand injury that he suffered
in the Geico event earlier this year.
That kind of hampered him. He looked good early, and then I understand you got to call it quits at a certain point because you don't want to, you know, you're trying to compete for a spot as early as this fall, so you need to heal up. So with that said, Ignacio went 24 for 37. I mean, not Ignacio, Shockey went 24 for 37. He's taken a year up at Naps before joining the midshipmen in 2018. So it's kind of tough to have such a great big performance and you're going to disappear a little bit for a year. But you really see what he could bring to the table for the midshipmen. And again, another class, when we get into class breakdowns later this year, that'll be fun to break down.
Yeah, like I actually wrote him down as another standout for me as well. So it's good to hear that I'm being resounded. But, you know, if the South had won, I thought he would have been a prime candidate for the MVP. You know, 24-37 is no joke. He's a guy who just doesn't lose faceoffs. Like, his story is incredible. This is a guy who started out playing attack and basically was upset by the amount of time the other team had the ball. So he's like, all right, I'm going to play faceoff. I'm going to be the best faceoff guy I can be and give my team about 80% of the possessions because that's what I'm winning my faceoffs at. But he's, like you said, he's got a year at Naps before he gets to play for Navy, but he should be a force once he arrives there. He's also a really good kayaker, which I think is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, Christian Sweezy for Inside Lacrosse wrote a story about that. It's a cool trait. I want to go get my kayak right now. You mentioned the defense earlier. I was really impressed by the Poles in this game. We watching these guys on tape, their athleticism, their reach, the length in terms of how are they able to defend really kind of came through in this game. It was cool to see. Guys that impressed me, Jackson Caputo and Adrian Enchel, both Brown guys. And, you know, yeah, we talk about Brown and how important Long Poles is, are in that style of offense. They should be contributors right away. Rain Schamberger, I thought was another interesting guy. Three ground balls for him. He's out of the Atlanta area.
Going to Duke
kind of fits what the type of athlete they like on that team. And Arden Cohen, another guy, very impressive. Really good defensive class. It snuck up on me a little bit. Oh, and one more, Frankie Tangredi. I thought Tangredi looked great, too, in one-on-one situations. Awesome crew. It's interesting to stand out. And again, I think the balance when you're building these teams is maybe you're not going to play not a lot of team defense in this game, but you want guys that can athletically go toe-to-toe with the offensive players, and I think you saw that with this crew.
Let's wrap up discussion on the senior game by talking about our number one player from last year's rankings, Bubba Fairman. He had two pretty notable scores in this game. That one where he basically started at X, dodged all the way to the top of the box, got into the crease, and then scored with his left. And then the behind the back goal, and then which was actually overshadowed by the eventual RKO. But he's a tremendous athlete, really dynamic player, and kind of like what Paul was referring to on the broadcast, how cool is it that this guy is the number one player, and he's from Utah? That's awesome.
Yeah, I followed Bubba's story for a couple of years now. It's a great story, and he's going to be an awesome ambassador for the sport once he gets to Maryland and beyond. I see a lot of good things for him moving forward. He played some midfield in this game,
yeah,
and a little defense. I think that's good to see. They have a lot of options on the table. Maryland loses the entire starting attack, so they have a lot of guys who can be competing for spots. You expect Bernhardt to be down there. It's always kind of been the narrative that's been talked about him. He was going to play midfield for a year, and then once all those guys move on, he would move down to attack. You expect someone like a Connor Kelly, depending on where they need him, on midfield, maybe keep him on attack to start on possessions. One of those guys, it's good to have him on the field as much as possible. Then there's some other spots, though. And Bubba should be competing for that. But say it just doesn't make sense to have him out there. He showed enough versatility in this game, I think, in his game in general, to regardless of what happens, he'll see minutes on the field. He can run as an offensive midfielder out of the box, maybe. If he gets stuck on defense, he has the athleticism to play there. That's good for him. That's good to see that he can be versatile and fight for minutes on multiple positions for Maryland.
Yeah, Jeff, I really like Bubba's potential as an attackman more so than I like him as a midfielder, but obviously a lot of opportunity with the graduation of three starting attackmen. We'll see how that pans out. I'm really excited to see what John Tillman does with the older guys still left on that squad and then the new guys coming in. Can't wait to get there in the fall and see what he shakes out. Before we move on, Jeff, we got to give a shout-out to our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/lacrosse. All right, Jeff, the Under Armour Senior Game was not the only event held on the campus of Towson University this past weekend. We were also privy to the Underclass Games, which has really become one of the marquee recruiting events on the entire summer calendar. In the highlight division, Philly, they won in the highlight division, a tremendous overtime victory for them, TJ Malone scoring the OT slap shot goal, kind of like the Colin Heacock goal from the Final Four weekend. And then in the command division, Long Island put the cherry on top of an undefeated pool play by going undefeated in the playoffs and beating a very competitive Baltimore team in the final. Jeff, what were your thoughts from this underclass tournament?
You've talked about this in our discussions a little bit, but a lot of good kids coming through the classes the next couple of years. But I think people are really, if you care about this stuff, if you're intrigued by what the talent is out there, I think you really want to start keying in on the 2020 class. And I thought we saw a little bit of that in that Long Island-Baltimore matchup.
Yep.
So Brandon O'Neill, kid out of St. Anthony's, committed to Penn State, won the MVP for the tournament. I want to say he was one of his top scorer in that division.
Mm-hmm.
He's someone that we've known about. I've watched him play high school. Tremendous. You know, at this age, it's interesting to say tremendous size, but he does have the good size, and he knows how to use it. But his real strength is his left-hand shot and his release. It's just, it's wicked fast. It's nuts, and he really took advantage of that this weekend. But I thought two kids that kind of popped up for me were the other two big attackmen for this tournament. Xavier Arline, Shoreham Wading River, committed to North Carolina. Kind of worked the right side to O'Neill's left. Oh, quick, fast, good underneath. Really good at just getting a shot off. Thought he was tremendous, great player. And then Brendan Grimes, out of Boys Latin, committed to Ohio State. He's someone I watched in the high school season. I thought was okay, good. Kind of showed some moxie in games. And then this game, he had 8 points, 6 goals and 2 assists, I want to say, including 6 goals in a row. And he was just tremendous. He looks bigger than he did in high school. And I don't know if that's just comparison guys in his same grade class versus, you know, Alto grade. I don't know what that was. But his skill sets, someone had mentioned it, Pat Spencerian. He looks very much like Pat Spencer in terms of his abilities to finish plays, create offense, attack, especially from the left side, and really just take over a game. It was fascinating to watch. Really good top-tier talent in this 2020 class that really stood out to me.
Yeah, and to provide a little bit more context on his performance, Long Island won this game 11-9.
Correct.
So Brendan Grimes had a hand in 8 of Baltimore's 9 goals. And we were like, oh, wait, that 9th goal? Someone besides Brendan Grimes didn't score? Unbelievable. But you exactly hit the nail on the head. These were the two guys that I highlighted as my command standouts. Brennan O'Neill, size. Dude, this guy is huge. 6'2", probably about 200 pounds. Really does overpower pretty much every defender that he comes up against in his 2020 class. But he also really plays the game sort of unconventionally than I see a lot of players, you know, kind of from his area, from Long Island play. Kind of plays a box kind of style, one-handed with that left. Tries to sweep to his left or deliver kind of with his craftiness, very crafty player with the stick. And then, like you said, Brennan Grimes, he kind of established himself at Boys Latin as a set-foot lefty shooter. That's how they kind of set him up for goals. And the lefty shot is tremendous. I saw him score a few in this tournament. But what I also saw from him in this tournament was a tendency to kind of do everything. You know, he was dodging from X. He was dodging from the left wing. He was, you know, putting his athleticism on display. And I got to say, this is a guy who really wasn't on our radar before this high school season, and then his stock has simply skyrocketed.
I'd agree with that. He also worked well with Daniel Kelly out of Calvert Hall, who I'm assuming is committed to North Carolina, who, again, smart player, did well, really well, played off him as well. So it's good to see that little two-man game. It shows he can work well with others and communicate well on the field. One other kid in this game, Justin Brown. Half Hollow Hills West in New York, committed to Michigan, midfielder, had three goals, did a good job breaking down defenses, and scored some crucial goals late to help Long Island win this game. A lot of good traditional talent in this contest. And again, I think a harbinger of if you're into recruiting classes, into where the best talent is, this 2020 crew is going to be one to watch.
Yeah, and that was actually one thing I took away from Maverick Showtime, is that I thought that the cream of the crop of the players at the overall event were the 2020s. It really is looking kind of like it's going to pan out as a special group of players, not unlike the group of freshmen that we just saw last year within the college ranks. Let's go to the upper kids, though, the 18s and 19s, the highlight division. I've got a few standouts. First, I want to give a shout-out to Kyle Long, an attack/midfielder committed to the University of Maryland. He's from Springfield Delco, Pennsylvania State champs, coached by none other than Barstool Jordy. Shout out Jordy. He had 109 assists for Springfield this past year, so I was kind of like, wow, that's a prodigious number almost. I kind of got to see what his game is all about. Saw what his game was all about. Tremendously quick dude. Great initiator. Great vision. Very skilled passing the ball. A little hesitant to shoot, I will say. But he won MVP of the highlight division. He had, I would say, 4 goals in the championship game. So he had 3 goals conventionally. And then this is the bizarre part of that championship. He had the ball with maybe less than 10 seconds, kind of threw it up, kind of like a five flies kind of throw, like maybe it'll go in somebody's stick. The ball takes an awkward bounce, finds itself into the goal. It was a little disputed whether the ball was, you know, the goal was really his, or maybe it deflected off some other guy's stick. But he had at least 3 goals in the championship. Really kind of came in clutch for Philadelphia. Another kid I want to shout out playing for New England was Brian Cameron, attackman committed to UNC. This is a kid who's played a lot of our events. We're very familiar with his game. He's tremendously big, 6'3", 180 pounds, but just an unbelievable ability to get to the rack and score. Like, he's not the fastest guy, but he knows how to use that big frame so well to put himself into a position to score. He had a division-high 14 goals. He's one of the standout players I'll be highlighting in my post coming soon on InsideLacrosse.com. Here's another kid whose stock has really risen considerably this summer, and that's Quinton Buckman. He is a midfielder from California committed to Boston University. This guy, I'm not even lying, had the best shot at this tournament. He can get 80 miles per hour with just his wrists, and when he really steps into it, goodbye. This guy was rocketing balls past keepers. Defensively, I was really impressed by one player in particular, Evan Egan, and it's mostly for his physicality. This guy looks like a college defenseman right now. He's huge. He's jacked. He plays a very violent and aggressive style. 2 goalies I want to highlight as well. Chris Brandow, playing for the Baltimore squad, and then Caton Johnson, the championship-winning goalie for the Philly squad. I feel like Johnson in particular, every time he came into the game, that's when it went Philly's way. They started winning faceoffs, they started scoring goals, and he was making stops on the other end. That's a big reason why they won the championship. And then another guy I want to shout out, George with Chelms, an attackman playing for Long Island, committed to the University of Maryland. Not going to lie, this guy's game was highly reminiscent of Matt Rambo's. Lefty attackman, very well built in the upper body. Not necessarily the fastest guy, but uses that body so well, uses those shoulders to lean into defenders, putting himself in a position to feed or score. Really impressed with his game.
Yeah, to your points, I thought Kyle Long was the revelation for me of this tournament. He's someone who I'd known, but really kind of stood out playing on that Philly crew. Also, alongside him, Grayson Saladay, thought his athleticism kind of stood up there. For New Jersey, Michael Harris, the goalie for them, who's committed to Providence, had a nice tournament, including a nice half in the title game. And their defense, featuring guys like Jack Ruddy, committed to Lafayette, Patrick McElroy, committed to Denver, and LSM Judah Hicks, who's uncommitted but is a Morristown guy, I thought all stood out for them as well. You mentioned Brian Cameron. His running mate, I also thought was impressive, Zachary Ludd. He's someone we've followed for a while, but he's committed to Ohio State. Could sort of work the right side to Cameron's ability to kind of attack the left a little bit. We're kind of the guys that stood out to me outside of the ones that you talked about. There's also a couple other. The West team in general, it was fun to watch. A lot of really good athleticism across the board with that crew. I mean, starting with Isaiah Dawson, who's our number one guy in the class of 2018.
Yeah.
And going on down from there, a young man, I can't remember his first name, Hanley was his last name, really good attacker.
Sam Hanley from Oregon. 6'6".
Yes.
Huge.
Huge kid, did a really good job. Really impressed me. Another one of those guys that kind of you see rise to the top in an event like this. So, good stuff across the board from the 18s and 19s with this crew.
Yeah, I remember on last week's podcast, I kind of made a shot in the dark prediction that the West would win this tournament. And after 2 days, it would appear that they were in the running to be the favorites. They were 4-0, but I believe for the third year in a row, they went 4-0 in pool play and did not get it done on playoff Sunday. But they were actually probably the most talented team there. They only had one player who was listed as uncommitted, but I believe in the time since he had committed to a Division III program. So I was tremendously impressed, like you said, with the amount of athletes that they have on this team. I mean, they had an attack that was probably at average 6-2 at one point between Sam Hanley, Ellis Geis, Big Gid committed to Denver, and then whoever they kind of wanted to run as that third attackman. Two other guys I want to highlight from the highlight division were Jacob Kelly, one of the top goal scorers in the entire highlight division. He had a tremendous tournament, I believe 12 goals, I think. One of the better attackmen showcasing his talent at the entire weekend. And then Nicholas DeMeo, who was the top assister at this camp, he had 12, kind of was a quietly excellent force for that West team. But once again, simply blown away by the concentration of talent at both the underclass and the senior games. This really is one of the marquee events of the entire recruiting calendar.
As always, it's always fun to be have your hands in helping build the senior team. And then it really, you spend a couple, 2-3 days out on the fields for the other guys, and you really get a good sense of a baseline of talent for your upcoming rankings and for, you know, evaluations and all sorts of things. So it's time well spent.
Yeah, and in terms of efficiency, there's probably no better weekend. It's like, oh, they're all here.
Yeah, they're almost all there. I think, again, you're always going to be conscious of things like your Canadian players and stuff like that who have different schedules.
Yeah, I believe there was plans to put a Canadian regional team in this year's tournament, but they scrapped it.
It's tough. Those guys are so committed to their summer box leagues.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, if you look at the results, it's well worth them to play in those. The skill sets that you get there are just you're not going to get anywhere else. And I don't fault them for wanting to do that. I would send more Americans up there if I could.
But be on the lookout, listeners, for a detailed post kind of highlighting the standouts from this event, link to their evaluations. That'll be up on Inside Lacrosse sometime this week. Jeff, looking forward, we've got our own event coming next week, July 10th through 12th at Cedar Lane Park in Bel Air, Maryland. It's the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Invitational July session. Our man JD5, Josh Davey, gave us a little bit of a primer that you were going to relate.
Yeah, so it's our second session of the ILRI, the Insula Lacrosse Recruiting Invitational. We are headed up the Bel Air area of Maryland to Cedar Lanes, huge fields, tons of teams. We're going to have 60 teams participating in this in classes 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021. Big emphasis definitely on the 2019 and 2020s in this crew, 2018s too. From teams from all over the country, programs with heavy name programs like BBL out of New Jersey, Primetime out of Long Island, Evolve Elite out of Canada, Ottawa Capitals out of Canada, HOCO out of Maryland, CT Chargers, another really good program out of Connecticut, Colorado Fire, so a nationally focused program, Florida Swashbucklers, another one, that will bring a lot of good teams together, playing good team lacrosse, and in those atmospheres, you really get a good sense of how players communicate with each other, work with each other, over a three-day period, and it's some, you know, really competitive atmosphere. It's a big sort of Super Bowl event for us at IL, and I know our team's been really working on it, and we'll be heading up there with all the editorial bells and whistles that we bring to these events, and I'm looking forward to spend three more days out on the fields covering some championships. There's one story I definitely want people to focus on or kind of pay attention to. We have a program called Nations United coming to this event. There's a story on InsideLacrosse.com this week written by Terry Foy. It's kind of a story podcast that focuses on this group. It was started by, co-founded by Isaiah Dawson's father, number one recruit in the 2018 class. His father, Brian Dawson, who's since then helped assemble a board of directors with a lot of people in lacrosse. I actually got to meet Brian this past weekend at the Under Armour event, and talk with him and Jeremy Ardrey, who's one of the board of directors, and just get a sense of them and their team. It's a cool idea. Their mission statement is to utilize elite-level lacrosse to inspire diversity, to foster long-lasting relationships that cross ethnic, socioeconomic, and geographic boundaries, serving as the catalyst for increased participation in the lacrosse community. This is an initiative led from an African-American perspective, a minority perspective, to kind of continue to introduce the sport to the African American community and the minority community, but also kind of bring a different perspective for the traditional communities of lacrosse as well. Chaz Woodson is their coach. The team is majority minority, but also provides opportunity for majority players to get a sense of what it feels like to be in those situations and to build camaraderie, build teamship, build new connections that they wouldn't otherwise do. This was sort of the feature story of our June issue, so you can pick that up or check it out. Some of those articles are online, and the podcasts are up, kind of talking a little bit more about the initiatives this program is pursuing. That being said, it's going to be a lot of good lacrosse played by the Nations United crew as well. And they'll be at our event this week and should be one of the top teams out there with a lot of top Division I talent. So that's definitely a story to follow and one that we'll be keeping watch on as we go through the next week of ILRI coverage.
Yeah, I can't believe it's here already. It kind of felt like, oh, man, it's June, and now it's actually beyond July 4th. We've got that event coming up, and then, of course, we got the big, fat Committed Academy coming up at the end of the summer. We'll get to that when that time comes. But we're really excited to go to work with the ILRI July session. That's pretty much our show. Thank you to everybody who listened. It was a tremendous weekend. I'm glad we could kind of relay everything that we saw to you guys. If you guys have any comments or feedback, you know, feel free to email us or, you know, reach out to us on Twitter. And if you like the podcast, please tell a friend. Please leave an iTunes review. We thank everybody for the listen. We'll see you guys next time, bringing you a recap of the ILRI July session. Thank you.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.